experts are back. This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
It's 9:35, and we're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a guest on the line a gentleman who you know all too well and a returning guest, Dr. Wayne Beasley, who is the veterinarian out at Cedar Creek Vet Clinic in Williamston. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Beasley.
Hey, good morning, Rick and Lee. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's always our pleasure to have you on the show. Dr. Beasley, for our listeners who don't remember, can you explain to them the kinds of different animals that you work on out at Cedar Creek? Because you aren't just the typical cat and dog kind of guy, if I remember.
Well, you know, we primarily do dogs and cats, but that's probably about 60% of what we do, but about 40% of what we do are broken into, you know, birds, reptiles. We do ferrets, guinea pigs, hamsters, rabbits. And with, the Lansing area being more friendly towards backyard chickens and ducks, we're seeing plenty of those, too.
Don't forget the fish.
And the fish. That's
okay. Okay.
Yeah, yep. Can't forget those guys.
Yeah, occasionally you get a client coming through with the fish.
Yep.
And I don't know that too many people know your particular passions, but I've had the chance to kind of walk through your homestead and find quite a zoo-type atmosphere there all in of its own. So I was hoping maybe you could explore a little bit about your own personal exotic animals. That's kind of the topic of today, and I'd like to have people know that you do keep some exotic animals and what your passions are.
Well, my pets have basically evolved over, you know, the last 40 years. And when I show people my collection, it's limited, but it's basically made up of what I called apex pets. In other words, like each category, say fish, for example, I started out like a lot of people with, you know, the mollies and swordtails and angelfish and got into breeding fish. Swordtails, molly, you know, all that stuff, and angelfish and stuff. But then I found, what is my favorite fish? Well, it turns out that it's a freshwater stingray out of Brazil. They're just beautiful. And for me, that's the pinnacle of the fish world. For me to be able to keep those, and actually we've gotten some babies from them, and it's just fascinating.
You're not doing the animal justice without describing it. So give a quick description of what that Leopoldi stingray looks like.
Well, the female's about 3 feet long. It's a 30-inch disc, and I have it in a 600-gallon along with the male, and they have one baby. But it's jet black with some white polka dots on it, sort of like a reverse Dalmatian.
And it's crazy. It is just absolutely beautiful. Just Google anyone out there listening, Leopoldi stingray, and you will see one of the most spectacular and most popular of the rays if it weren't for its size. I mean, more people would have them if they were appropriate for an indoor situation. But any of us that keep fish can certainly be fascinated with that particular animal. And you've had more than one baby, haven't you?
Yeah, we've had about a total of five.
Okay. And where do they usually go, these Leopoldi babies that you produce?
Well, there are people around the state that also breed them. And what we try and do is switch them out for different bloodlines and stuff like that. So mine, I've placed two males and a female with other breeders because they want different bloodlines, and they're kind of raising up babies to basically just keep the captive population, you know, as genetically diverse as possible.
So I had talked to the audience about many years ago, my wife going out and capturing an iguana in a field not too far from yours, and your excitement when you found that we had captured that, and you came over to her store in about 10 seconds to get there.
Yeah.
Tell us about your passion with that particular character and lizards in general.
Well, basically, you know, reptiles, geez, that goes back to the days when, me and my friends as single-digit age kids, you know, 7 to 10, we used to just kind of be out in the fields looking for snakes and stuff like that. And, all this reptile stuff with the turtles and all that comes from childhood fascination and maybe their association with dinosaurs, who knows. But but basically, it's just eventually you keep iguanas, and that particular one was one that I had, and I was trying to get it natural sunlight.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And, you know, basically that iguana was pretty much one that I could put outside on a leash. He would go up to a tree, kind of hang out there, and, you know, get some sunshine. Well, one day he decided that, hey, I've had it with the leash. I'm gonna head out. You know, I'm gonna regain my wild heritage. So,
Oh yeah.
He took a little trek to the south. I think he was heading for South America. He got about a mile to one of my neighbors and crawled up on. I remember this. Crawled up on their deck, and the story was that the daughter came in and said, "Mama, there's a dinosaur on the deck." And, you know, that was my iguana that actually made it a mile south to her deck and. Of course, she called Debbie, and boy, I had literally spent like 4 weeks looking for that rascal, and to have him show up, that was fantastic.
Well, that's good, and you know that you bring up a topic. Providing the right environment for these exotic animals is a passion of yours.
Yeah,
passion of ours. That you know, we kind of do it on a more preventative basis, on a day in, day out basis. But, but for you, that's a tough lesson for people to learn if they don't actually learn when they first get their animal. Is that true?
Oh yeah, these animals are very resourceful. They can, you know, people want to keep their tortoises outside. They got to realize those tortoises can burrow underground and just, you know, in about a day and just burrow right underneath your fence and then they're gone.
Yeah, so the learning curve can be a little difficult. So
definitely.
And then you have a koi pond on the side yard.
Yep, we've got a koi pond where, you know, actually I got the koi from you, and boy, they have just turned into spectacular fish. And they, you know, they basically are pretty much have reached steady state at about 150. You know, I try and weed them out every so often, send some your way. And but basically, it's always fascinating to see these little 2-inch fish or 3-inch fish that have survived, and all of a sudden they show up with the adults, you know, ready for food. But here they were, you know, born in the pond and made their way all the way up the ranks and. Show up with new colors. So that's something kind of neat to see every year.
The one thing that I think the listening audience may not realize, because your particular veterinary practice exercises exotic animals as its discipline, one thing that's interesting is that you're always away from your practice, it seems, not always, but commonly away from your practice, learning more about how to treat these particular animals. And that's one of those things that you have to do once you've decided to go for exotic animal veterinary practice. Is that true? It's an ongoing learning curve.
It's an ongoing learning curve, and for several reasons. Number one, exotic pets don't have big food company budgets behind their research. So a lot of the research that, say, for instance, goes on with birds, a lot of that research is funded by private bird clubs, private bird owners, donating money to different places like North Carolina and the University of Georgia, where Branson Ritchie and some others, you know, they do the lead research. And a lot of that stuff, you know, $50,000 to $200,000 for each individual little test that they might be doing to learn one small, you know, advancing step in the knowledge of birds. And you have to get there every year. Not only for birds, but, you know, they have an annual conference, but reptiles have annual conferences, and then there's a small mammal group.
Fish?
Oh, yeah.
I know you've gone there.
Yep. The fish places have all their research, and, you know, it's just something that, that we love to do. We meet people in those different fields at these conventions, so you end up with, you know, 40 or 50 other veterinarians and other researchers that, you know, you meet them on a casual basis, but they're there to support you if you get a case where there's just, you know, you just need some, you know, some additional information. You can go to those people.
And sometimes it's a short wall that you have to climb over, but it's a very expensive wall. And until somebody's willing to put those financial resources out there, you know, we just have to keep dealing with the frustrations of not knowing how to do with something. So that's the whole idea of what you do and where you go.
That's right. And sometimes, you know, we have to, you know, tell people, hey, you know what, this is the way we used to do it, but research shows we should be maybe feeding birds or reptiles or fish this way.
Yeah. Humbling. So, humbling,
yeah,
for sure.
It is, yeah. But the new treatments that come up with for problems that used to be such a headache, sometimes you just get these miracle products that are like, you know what, your fish has this problem, look what the medication we have, and bam. People are like amazed that just by dipping their fish in this solution for 5 minutes once a day, it cures this problem that has plagued the industry for, you know, decades.
And that's even in our case, we had the catfish that was in the river, and he fell ill. And Hoover, and he's kind of a very important store fixture.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you just came in, and it may have been you or Dr. Nolan, mm-hmm. and gave him a vaccination or an inoculation or an injection, if you will, of B12, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And after the medication that he had, that's what got him back to eating and doing real well. And it was miraculous. It was like, wow.
Yeah, I know, because there's no worse feeling than to have your favorite pet just languishing, you know. Everybody wants their pets to be, you know, like their children, happy and running around and having fun, you know.
Well, and in the case of Hoover, the audience needs to know he's, what, 25 years old?
He's at least that. Yeah, we got him in 1986. There was a store local here called Lansing Pet that was going out of business, and I was able to acquire him at that point and have kept him ever since. And that was in 1986. And
wow.
Dr. Wayne Beasley has helped me keep him nice and healthy and doing well. So,
well, yeah, that's a tribute to you guys that you could, you know, keep him thriving for that long that you guys
have. Well, he's got a river now, so.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone doesn't have a river. Dr. Beasley, I have a question because your passion for animals is really apparent in listening to you. But I have the question, does the work that you do by day in caring for the animals create the emotion that you feel toward animal in your personal life, or is it that genuine love that you've had in your personal life leads you to do what you do during the day, if that makes sense?
Well, basically what my daily routine is I get to see people who share a fascination and a love for their pets, and I'm there to bolster that relationship. If the pet's sick, I can see that the person's under distress. I love, you know, half the fun of my business is just getting to meet a different set of people every day that if I weren't in this business, I'd never get a chance to meet them. But I get to know the person and their pet and their relationship, and it's like, you know what, let's work together to fix your pet, because we got to not only get a history as far as how are you keeping it, what are you feeding it, but we got to maybe run a few tests to find out what actually is the problem, and then working together, we can guide them towards getting that pet healthy. But I just love to get exposed to another person who's fascinated with their pet, who obviously cares about it, and then become kind of friends with them and work as a team to get their pet better. And then, you know, to get a call a couple of weeks later that, oh, man, my pet's doing so much better. He's eating. He's running around. Thank you. I mean, that, you know, you can't help but just bring a smile to your face that, you know, you're doing some good.
I will echo that as loud as I can. I've known you and you've worked with us since, I don't know, at least late 80s, if not longer. And that is exactly who Dr. Wayne Beasley and Cedar Creek Veterinary Clinic is all about. I would definitely attest to all of that, and it's what drives me, it's what drives you. And as you and I have chatted before, you know, we're public servants, just happen to be around pets and people.
Exactly right. But, you know, one thing I wanted to mention, too, about we were talking about the fish, is that those stingrays, what's nice about them is that they're freshwater. And then as we were talking about other apex pets, there's also a predatory fish, a garfish that I have that I've had since he was 3 inches long, and now he's about 36 inches long.
Wow.
I hear about him. We look in that little tank that you have, and it was a little cloudy the day. We couldn't find him in there, but he's there.
It sounds like a sight to see.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say we're out of time, but thank you so much, Dr. Wayne Beasley.
Oh, you're welcome.
From the Cedar Creek Vet Clinic in Williamston. And Rick, we'll be back right after the break here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.